warm welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. On this week's episode, we'll look back on Saturday's agonising loss in the Scottish Cup to Ayr United, preview the visit of Dumbarton this weekend, and with just over 4 weeks before the transfer window opens again, we look at where the management team may be looking to strengthen. Yes, welcome along to this week's episode of the Blue Team Podcast. I am Colin Byers, and as you could probably tell by the voice, still feeling the effects of Saturday and Mr. Kirkland, which we'll come on to in a moment. But thankfully with me, hopefully to do a bit of the more of the heavy lifting this week, is Martin Smith. Martin, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks, Colin. How are you?
I'm getting there. Just, although the voice is still going for you. For Saturday's game, I think justifiably angry and frustrated by it.
Oh, absolutely. I think anybody who was there on Saturday would be pretty much in the same boat. The folk around about us, they were exactly the same. We could not believe the standard of the refereeing that we had on Saturday. Not for the first time either. Not for the first time either with said referee as well. So, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot to digest in the next 45 minutes.
Yeah, it also didn't help as well. I was at my daughter's football yesterday as well. I was shouting her as well. So I probably should have skipped that game as well. But and they weren't well either. They were 1-0 up until the last kick of the ball as well. And I just couldn't believe it happened 2 days in a row.
So the common thing here is you were at both games, yeah. And twice a team of yours report and were leading then conceded late on.
Yes, but thankfully it didn't go into extra time, and I think it was just a league game, so it was fine. So Saturday's game, then cup game, big game. It was against the Ayr Championship side, sitting six as we previewed last week. It was always going to be a banana skin tie for the visitors, and for large spells of it looked as though it was going to be a massive banana skin. But interestingly enough, we spoke to a couple of guys in the bar beforehand, and they were saying the same thing as well for the Ayr side.
Yeah, the guys that we spoke to in the bar, they were saying that Pierre were almost guaranteed to score. They didn't rate their team's chances of keeping a clean sheet. And then the team lineups come out, and one guy actually said, well, yeah, you're assuming it's score now, because they didn't rate the team that was putting out either. I think, first of all, massively proud of the effort that the guys put in to take a championship team, a full-time team, all the way to the wire and a little bit extra. I think it's sort of remarkable, and some of the performances and the way the guys played are really, really good. And just undone, you know, with the last kick of the ball in 90 minutes. It just, I think David Wilson, or it was maybe Ryan, one of them touched on in their post-match interview, the ball hits the corner flag and goes out for a corner, rather than hits a corner flag and goes out for a throw-in. And it literally is that fine little margins. And then an extra time, I think they really did turn the screw, that they're a full-time team. They were able to bring on fresher players. These guys can go that bit longer. But no, overall, thoughts were that, you know, proud of the guys for the efforts that they put in. It was just that one stage, you know, that one step, sorry, too far.
Before we get on to the game, we should obviously talk about speaking to a couple of guys in the bar. The bar was really busy beforehand. Raucous would be one word to say.
They were boisterous, but to be fair, sometimes you can get a support up and they can be boisterous and they can be a wee bit out of hand, but I think overall fit we seen on Saturday, I kind of comment for fit the staff maybe think, but you know, I think the guys did themselves proud. They turned up a really good support. They were in full fine voice, as you would be if you're leaving, you know, Ayr at 8 o'clock in the morning to travel up to Peterhead. But yeah, they did themselves proud of their travelling support.
I think there was one guy, he looked about 12 and was asked to leave the premises.
Yeah, he was politely asked if he wanted to take in a wee bit of fresh air, which he duly obliged, to be fair, but 10 minutes later came back in, so maybe just a small chat outside with the gentleman.
Yeah, he came back in again with a burger, but then went and dropped the burger on the floor.
Yeah, he was too focused on singing his team song and giving it a wee bit of welly, a wee bit of laldy with the clapping of the hand, and the burger went flying. Slightly humorous, but probably not for him.
Sorry, it's humorous, but a waste of a burger, nonetheless.
That was your first thought, was it?
So, we mentioned the team lineups, and as you said, so Jason Brown was missing, picked up an injury on training through the week. But Hamish Ritchie started for the first time since the beginning of September for him, so it was good to see him on. But it also meant that David Wilson was starting again for the second game in a row. We sort of commented on the back four, the lineup of the back four. Obviously, it's now our first. It's now we're sort of first selection that we're or dare I say that our best starting back four. They certainly acquitted themselves pretty well, that the four that did play.
Yeah, I think since the start of the season, Ryan and Jason's always been were two centre-backs that have played when they've been fit. And arguably you would say that they were two best ones, but that's open to people's opinions. But I think that David Wilson coming in, he has not looked out of place at all. He's had to wait his time. And ever the model professional that he is, he's done that. Even going back to last season, he went out on loan. He's come back this season. He's knuckled doing well. And I think, arguably, one of the best players that we had on Saturday. I can't Stuart McKenzie got a man in the match, rightly so. A couple of really good saves. But the tackles that Davy Wilson was putting in and the way he organised the defence with Scott Ross at the back, I thought was colossal. Really, really good effort for Davy Wilson.
Okay, Caleb Goldie as well. We thought he was going to be missing with his shoulder injury, but recovered well and played again at right back. Donny Strachan was at left back. So, as I said, they all performed pretty well.
Yeah, and a good mention for Caleb there, because last week, just before the Steny game, I think I was, after Stranraer, we're sort of questioning a wee bit. I think his performances had started to dip ever so slightly. Again, go by the high standards that he'd set himself in pre-season and early on in the season. And yeah, he maybe a couple of games, he hadn't quite been hitting them marks that he would have liked, but yeah, he's come back really well. Again, moved to a more natural position for him, and I thought he did really well.
As you said, Hamish Ritchie starting as well for the first time since the 2nd of September, the defeat down at Stranraer. We wondered how long we were going to get out of him. We got just over an hour, I think it was, before the changes were made. And again, performed well. What did you make of his performance overall then, having played the best part of an hour for the first time in over 2 months?
Yeah, I thought he did well. I didn't think he was going to get anything more than an hour, to be fair. When we seen him in the starting lineup, you always knew that would have probably been one of the first changes on Ryan and Jordan's mind. I certainly didn't think he was ever going to be playing 90 minutes. But yeah, putting a good performance. I think he is one of them players that is really good coming off the bench. I think he's really effective. I think when you've got tired in defence and tired players and Hamish comes on, he's always a threat. But he didn't look out of place again playing against a championship side, and that's what we've got to remember. We're up against a full-time championship side, and a lot of the players in the park on Saturday, in fact all of them on Saturday, didn't look out of place at all going up against them.
Maybe Jason's injury just forcing their hand a little bit, maybe we wanted to protect him a little bit longer, maybe bring him off the bench again. You know how impactful he's been in doing that in recent weeks.
Yeah, possibly, but I think the fact that he started the game, they obviously thought he was fit enough. I got a good run out, probably, and they're looking ahead to Saturday's game against Dumbarton. It was a good 60 minutes under his belt. And yeah, they'll probably assess him in training on Wednesday to see if he's good to start on Saturday or not.
When the game did get going and did kick off, for me, I thought that the first half especially, you were looking at two sides who were pretty evenly matched. If you asked a neutral to sort of pick which one was the championship side and which one was League Two side, I think it would be quite difficult for them to sort of nail do which one was which.
Yeah, I think there was only maybe about a 10-15 minute period in the game where they sort of turned the screw. Maybe what was it, about the half hour mark, we sort of commented to each other. I thought they're just starting to get a few shots off now and forcing Stuart into some good saves. But yeah, I think for the majority of the first half, even well into the second half, you'd have been hard pressed to say who was a full time team and who wasn't.
Yeah, it was all about the, as you said earlier on, about how defensively solid we were. Even if we did get, if any of them did get through behind the back line, McKenzie was there, and probably rightly got his Man of the Match award for the amount of saves he did make during the game.
Yeah, he looked very, very assured in goals. He has been messed this season, to be fair, and he's a big fella at the back to try and get past. And a couple of really good saves, crucial timings as well, and it's a variety of different saves. It's not just tipping over the bar or around the post. He's able to come and catch for it. There's a few of them on Saturday as well. And I think that gives your defence a huge confidence boost. Because obviously Ryan didn't play, Jason didn't play, Caleb went to right back, Danny going to left back, and if you came, you've got a solid goalkeeper like Stuart behind you, you know, that's massive for a defence playing in front of him as well.
Our best chance in the first half came to Hamish Ritchie, a brilliant solo run through the heart of the air defence, and gets into the 18-yard box, and maybe just put the drop his shot a little bit wide, but a wee cameo of what we can expect for Hamish.
I sort of squaffed it a wee bit, did he? You felt that, I mean, if you wanted it to fall to somebody, it would have been Hamish Ritchie, to be fair. I think he's maybe just seen the lights a wee bit, thought this might go in, but yeah, he dragged it wide. But as you said, that's the quality he's got. I certainly don't think he looked out of place against a Championship side, and, you know, quite easily he could have been playing in a Championship side, if we're being honest. I don't think there's any, you know, player on the park on Saturday for Ayr that you'd have thought, yeah, they've got the upper hand on us. I really did think we put in a really good shift.
I don't think really McKenzie was called into action too much the first half. Maybe he was in the second half, but you know, we had that opportunity with a sort of cross shot come cross for Caleb Goldie, which went just over the bar as well. So as I said earlier on, we're certainly a side that we're matching them for large spells of the game.
Yeah, and can you think that we're a League Two part-time side against a team that was sitting sixth in the Championship in full-time, we really did give them a game. You can sort of maybe see why, after the first 45 minutes, the guys in the bar for Ayr were a wee bit sceptical of their chances. When, you know, a few of them did say that it was a banana skin for them. You look at the draw, and really, Ayr couldn't have won in that sense, because if they win, they're expected to, and if they got beat, well, that's your banana skin headline for the cup draw as well. So, you could see by their first half performance, I don't think they came up here taking us lightly, but I certainly think they went in at half time. I think Lee Bullen would have certainly given him a rocket, because I think he'd have been expecting his team to play a wee bit better.
If he gave him a rocket or if he didn't give him a rocket, it certainly didn't make any difference, because it was Peter Heed that went 1-0 up just on the hour mark, I think it was. Kieran Shanks again with the goal coming from a mistake, but you know, you've got to take your opportunities when you get them, and I think this was really our only real clear cut opportunity in the second half, and it was the only one that we needed, and we spoke before about Kieran Shanks. If he just needs one chance, he's going to score. Really good finish, beating the keeper 1-1, and it was strange, because it just seemed to go in like slow motion. It seemed to take ages for it to go over the line, but obviously it didn't happen that way. But it's just one of those, you're waiting. Is it going to go in? Is it going again? Or is it going to bounce wide?
Yeah, it was one of them illusions where you thought it was never going to trickle over the line, or was it going to go past the post? But it all came to good work for him, in the sense of Kieran and Rory McAllister. They never gave up anything the whole game. They were always pressing that back four, back three at a time. And they never gave them any peace, and I think that's where the error sort of comes from. The defender tried to pass it back to his goalkeeper. It's well short. The pitch was quite heavy at times as well through the game. We commented on that. And Shanks does what he does best. He's through 1-on-1. He puts it away. And I think that's the difference. And we've got a striker that you give him a good chance or a half a chance, and he's going to stick it away. Look back a couple of weeks ago, Ben Armour for Stranraer, similar situation. He was through on goal, Stuart made a save. In this game, we've got Kieran Shanks, who's going through 1-on-1, and he eventually puts it past the keeper.
Yeah, eventually. 10 now for the season for him in 20 appearances, goal every other game, which is exactly what you're looking for your striker, considering he only scored one in his opening six games as well. So really starting to click as well, and finding the confidence to you know, take efforts like that on first time as well, because it could have easy. I go back to, I think it was the Edinburgh game last season, sort of similar position, and he tried to go round the keeper rather than taking the effort on, whereas this time he's got the confidence and he's taking the shot on.
Yeah, and that's a word, confidence. Last season, nobody in the team had confidence, and he, you know, Kieran sort of felt that. I'd been up top, he was struggling for goals. but he put an enormous amount of work, and I think now he's getting the reward of it. As you said, 10 goals in 20 appearances, and obviously they scored only one in his first six. I think a lot of folk were like, well, he's maybe not got to be the striker we thought he is, but I think him and McAllister have got that really good partnership up front. It's getting better week on week. And whilst obviously Rory didn't have an impact on the goal on Saturday for Keane, it just shows you he's got that confidence now. He can drive in towards goal, and his first thought is, where am I going to put it past the keeper, rather than maybe, as you said in the Edinburgh game last season, taking his head up and trying to find a pass. He's now the man that he's wanting to stick it in the back of the net.
As you said, McKenzie was very busy. In the end, Ayr had 21 shots, 10 on target. So he produced a lot of saves. 11 corners, I think, as well, Ayr had, so he was extremely busy. But you would have expected it, once Ayr went 1-0 down, for us to kind of go, to be, I wouldn't even say we were being bombarded a little bit with shots and efforts, but you'd expect our defence to be the busier of the two.
Yeah, I expected it, but I think the organisational skills that the guys have got, you've got experienced guys, Davy Wilson, and you'd Scott Ross at the back as well. I think the two of them, although they're near, you know, say they're near first choice partnership, but they're experienced guys at this level that know exactly how to try and defend. And I think for the majority of the game up until that final 25-30 seconds with the corner, and then the you know, the ball in, it just didn't fall for us. I think Davey mentioned that in his post match as well. It just didn't fall for us that last minute or two. But other than that, I didn't think we were really under enormous pressure. I think Stewart had two saves, I remember, later on in the second half. But again, they're, I say, comfortable for him. I think he's a really good goalkeeper at this level. So, yeah, I don't think we were overly worried and bombarded with efforts from Ayr, if I'm being honest.
It didn't look as though they were going to score either. Somebody did say after the game, they thought he could have been there all night and they score. Is it time was ticking away? You know, we played 5 minutes, we played 6 minutes, and then all of a sudden we were playing 7 minutes, and it didn't seem to be the time. The referee was just didn't seem to be willing to blow the whistle. And then prior to that equaliser, you look at the other end of the park, and Robert Ward gets fouled inside the box, and it's waved away. It might have been just outside, it might have been just in, but either way, it was a foul, and it wasn't picked up. Referee picks that one up, we kill the game then.
Yeah, I think given some of the fouls that he gave in the game, whether it's a penalty or a free kick, it's a foul. It doesn't matter if it's inside the box or outside the box, it's a foul. And at that stage of the game, that would have pretty much seen the game out, because a dying would have seen a shot, have gone into the corner, and that would have been the game done. But he was really close to it, he's looking right at it, he's deemed it need to be a foul, and given some of the fouls that he had given in the second half, I'm surprised he didn't. But on the other hand, I'm not surprised, because obviously some of the fouls that he did give, you think, well, he's just making up as he's going along. And then they've gone up the park, it's hit the corner, flagging out for a corner, and then we just kind of seen it out. And I think the frustrating bit is, it was 6 minutes added time, fully aware that it's a standard, it's a minimum of 6 minutes added time, but where he got the additional 2 and 3 minutes from, yeah, it's beggar's belief.
But even 6 minutes would seem to be... seem to be long for the amount of time. Okay, you've got your standard substitutions and things like that, but I know 4 or 5 minutes probably would have been justifiable.
I think I could just about get 6 minutes with the substitutions and the Joe McKee going down twice. I could just about get 6 minutes, but where there was an additional 2 and 3 minutes within that already pre-allocated 6 minutes of injury time, and then I came for that's comfy. And apparently, you know, it's been said that it was because we were time wasting within that 6 minutes that he added on an additional 2-3 minutes. I didn't believe that for 1 second, but you know, the referee's decision, as I say, is final.
There's probably not much we could have done about the goal, really, either. And you just wonder maybe if it's because we've put so much effort into it that we've maybe just switched off for a split second, and McGinty's got in the space to tap it in.
Yeah, probably. I think it's one of them. You sort of can, if you see that corner, then that is the game done. It's difficult for it. I've watched it back a few times now, and as soon as that goal goes in, you see the reaction of about three or four of our boys. They just crushed in the Flair. They got on their knees. And the effort that they put in, I can't be underestimated. I came from say, oh, they've got through an extra time. But look at the stats and the error and all this. But the effort that the guys put in, yeah, really, really cool way to go into extra time and subsequently lose it.
And the thing, being into extra time, and you sort of mentioned it in the game, the substitutions that were made I guess, just to try and see the game out within the 90 minutes. Shanks was off, McAllister was off, Richie was off, McKee was off, and it only really left Sandy Wood and Blessing Oluyemi left on the bench because we were struggling for numbers anyway. You're not going to bring one of those on just to try and freshen things up, but because we were trying to stay out in that 90 minutes, the extra time was going to be a long 30 minutes.
Yeah, and I think the substitutions, and yeah, I kind of criticised Ryan and Jordan for Dina because evidently if we'd seen at the corner, we won the game and the substitutions pay off, but we did try to leave ourselves when we went into extra time that we didn't really have much of an out ball. Aaron Reid's a totally different striker to Kieran Shanks and Rory McAllister. I think we sort of restricted ourselves slightly, and obviously the guys are part-time, and then I think AR made, was it two substitutions at half-time and extra time? And you could just tell that difference at fresher players and they used the ball well. So, yeah, no qualms with the substitutions that they did because you felt at the time it was the right ones to do and slowing the game down and the right personnel to be changed. It's just unfortunate that when it went out for time, I did feel that our options were slightly limited.
Yeah, and it was you were just hoping that we could see out and get us to penalties.
That's basically all that we were hoping for, I think, in the extra time period. I think we were on our knees, basically. You factor in we've conceded the goal, the amount of energy that they've had to use as well. And it's a thing as well. We're in the back of three games within a week. Ryan mentioned his post-match. There hasn't really been a group training session together for a few weeks because of the amount of games and the travelling and the guys have got work. And this isn't excuses, that's just the facts. These guys have got work to go to as well. So, yeah, monumental effort, and it was just a slight hurdle too far.
We got through the first 15 minutes, and then late on again in the second 15 minutes, or I say late on, maybe 3-4 minutes to go or something like that, Airwick then won the game. It was a good goal. Turned Scott Ross, and he's finished it off, but it was just an absolute kick in the teeth for, as you said, the hard work and the effort that the boys had put in that 120 plus minutes.
Sometimes you just watch a goal and you think, yeah, fair play. It's the guy's first touch. He's just done Scott because of the way he's... The striker knows what he's going to do. It's his first touch and he's turned his body as well. It's a first-time shot with the left foot under the goalkeeper. And obviously it doesn't give Scott or Stuart time to set themselves to try and defend it. It's a good goal, and you can see by their celebration that they were delighted with it.
Celebrations a bit over the top for beating a League Two side in a cup game?
I mean, I would hazard a guess. There was one fella that certainly thought he was Big Archie on the pitch twice with both the goals. But as you pointed out on Saturday, that they've beaten a part-time League Two side and it's taken them 120 minutes to do so. So, hey, if that's where their benchmark is for the season, I think they're in for a tough championship running.
I think so. I'll ask you this, then obviously the game went extra time and obviously we would have gone into penalties. There's obviously a change in the rules, but when it went to 1-1 because of their late equaliser years ago, we would have got a replay. Would you have taken the replay instead of going into extra time, potentially penalties?
No, I think I would have preferred to have settled it on the night. I think just using that game as an example, having it go down to air, which would have probably been a Tuesday or a Wednesday night, it would have been another time that we were playing three games within a week. I think finalising it on the night is a good thing. I'm nay a huge lover of the replays. I think the game should be done there and then. It's a bit like your two-legged playoffs that you get these days. I'm nay a huge lover of them. I'm fine pleased it was settled on the night because, you know, I still think the guys gave it their all. You know, another night we maybe nick it an extra time ourselves.
I'll rephrase the question. Would you think the chairman and the board would have preferred a replay? given that they would have gotten 50% of the gate.
Yes. Simple answer to that. Yeah, anything that generates the club a bit of money is always welcomed. But I think if you factor in the travel and everything from an away night to an air, like I said, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, which has obviously got to be played at some point in December or early January because of the next round being on the 20th, then, yeah, you've got a whole lot of logistical nightmares as well, and players when they're working and everything. So whilst it would have been welcome for the board and the club, I'd assume it would have been nicer to get through on Saturday, but not to be.
Right, let's talk about Mr. Kirtland in a little bit more detail then. Obviously, we mentioned the added time. On the added time that he chose to do, he's missed a few there. Missed was one. There was one as well. We Wardy completely poleaxed at the halfway line. Clearly a foul. He's given a foul, but no yellow card. Yellow cards for things that weren't yellows and things that were yellows weren't yellows.
Yeah, he's just not a very good referee, is he? To be fair, to be blunt about it. I mean, I don't know his job, so I'm maybe not the best person to speak about it. But based on what we've seen in the last 2 years at Balmoor with Stephen Kirtland on the odd away game, I just don't think he's a very good referee. And I know that there's some referees being called up to do the VAR and assistant VAR and everything in the Premiership. And, hey, that's maybe taken its toll on the training programmes and whatnot. But I just don't think in the time that we've seen him, not just in this game and previous games as well, I just don't think he's a very good referee, to be honest.
No, and it was infuriating that the decisions he was making. As I said, we mentioned the amount of time where he was getting it for. He didn't even. I can't even recall any time during the game that he gestured to Peter Head players or goalkeeper, whoever it was, to speed things up or he was adding time on. Normally they're quite obvious when they're doing that.
They're the only one that I noticed. There was a shot and it was about, it had been about the 70th minute, it was just approaching half four, and the ball's gone over Stuart McKenzie's net and it's actually bounced in the wall behind. So Stuart hasn't even got a ball to get. He's going round the back of the goal to retrieve the ball from the ball boy or the fans, and you can see the referee pointing to his left wrist, evidently indicating time wasting. But that's the only thing I've seen, but if that's worthy of adding 2 and 3 minutes on towards an additional six, then I'd be surprised. But if that's the only thing, I don't know whether the referees maybe mentioned something to Ryan or Jordan as they've been playing, but yeah, I'm dumbfounded by that.
Obviously, referee from Ayrshire refereeing an Ayr game is a bit controversial, shall we say?
Yeah, I think it's highly controversial. I don't believe that there's not one referee out there that was not from Ayrshire that wasn't available to do the game. You know, I get that there is more probably referees from the Central Belt area than anywhere else. I get that. But you're not telling me that there wasn't a referee from the Dundee area, Dumfries, Glasgow, anywhere else that could have done Peterhead against Ayr. And the fact that it was an Ayrshire referee, I'm not going to, you know, speculate on controversy in terms of is there a reason for it? It's maybe just luck of the draw and we've been very unfortunate. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how often it's applied. We've spoke off air, but I'm sure years ago you didn't get such a thing where a referee from that area or within a X amount of radius could do that team's games for various reasons. So, yeah, I was surprised it was an Ayrshire referee that was able to do an Ayr game.
So it'd be interesting to see how they decide who does what games, if that's the kind of criteria that it comes into. Obviously, it doesn't, but it used to.
Yeah, years ago it did. I'm not sure whether the introduction of VAR has taken away a lot of the referees and they're just, dare I say it, they're happy just to hear referees doing it because it is a very difficult job to do. But I do think they need help. And you know, where they're from really shouldn't be a factor. They should be good enough to do a game, but take out any potential biasness that there may be. I'm not insinuating that there was, but you just think, had it been a referee from a different area, it takes away any unnecessary pressure that then becomes of that situation.
Yeah, we'll get some of your thoughts, and obviously Mr. Kirkland comes into your thoughts quite a bit, so we'll get through some of these just now. George Buchan, Peterhead went toe-to-toe with a full-time championship team for 90 minutes and were on the cusp of a giant killing, until the 12th man bailed them out. Superb effort by the whole team. Once again, the official spoiled the game. Lindsay Findlay, there's an official ref watcher in the stands every week taking notes and clock watching. I'd love to know what his report says about that today. Kev Stephen, we were brilliant against a full-time side considering we had players out. Always going to have to defend. They're always going to have the most of the ball, so a so-called full-time side, not the result that the boys deserved. Officials were a joke. Neil Thompson, no surprise, Ree Kirkland, his main stand mate, was just as bad. Felt gutted for the boys who gave their all and were dead in their feet by the end. My man of the match was David Wilson. After not playing much, has been great in the last 2 weeks. Was frustrated to lose the equalising the way we did. Looked as though we should have had something up at the other end, but was ignored. Rosie Cow, the referee was again for the away team. Shocking. He should have been watched both teams equally and not with with one eye open. The Blue Team were amazing, though. Norman Green, we played well. Plus, it was a penalty for us just before they scored. Duncan Brown, Air manager Lee Bullen asked the referee how much time was being added on, and he was told 6 minutes. He then went on to add an additional minute, and his explanation for that was Peterhead were time wasting. If Air hadn't scored, he would have found any other excuse to add on more. The only problem was that taking off Rory and Shanks looked like Ryan and Jordan thought we could see the game out, and not having a proven striker in the second half other than Jinky may have cost us. Last time we had came across Kirkland, he gave Shanks a red card and we lost the next 2 games. Hopefully he doesn't jinx us again. It's definitely a glass half empty there, but I hope he doesn't get doesn't get sent off or and jinxes him for the next game. Michael Wilson, Peterhead did okay, cheated by the referee. By the worst referee I've seen in a long time. Hope the ref has a safe trip home in the Airbus. Wayne Simpson, where he got 7 minutes added time, I don't know, absolute joke. Another fantastic performance and extremely unlucky not to be in the draw. David Wilson was unreal today. Just before they equalised, Ward should have had a penalty and with a chance to kill the game. The Ultras played their part again. The day they sung their hearts out and never stopped bouncing as well. Yeah, that's probably partly the reason why I've got sore throat as well, because we did join in and again.
We enjoyed it.
I'm disappointed they didn't try and join in with my rendition of Shanks is on fire, but I was the only one that was singing it after he scored. Maybe they'll pick this up and next week. Donny Fraser, referee was a disaster, playing all the time for Ayr to score. Shocking from the referee. Scott Reid, referee's a joke. Where he got 7 minutes for, I have no idea. Ward should have gotten a penalty. But apart from that, I think we played brilliantly considering we're 2 leagues above us. McKenzie deserved man of the match. He kept us in it for a while. Don't think the subs, apart from Ward, did anything. It's... that's an interesting point, that one, actually. Apart from Ward, he doesn't think that the subs did anything. We mentioned it, and you mentioned Aaron Reid earlier on as well. We sort of mentioned him. Bit disappointed with Aaron when he came off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a slight criticism, but there was one effort, I say effort, the left-back played it to the goalkeeper, and you'd have thought Aaron had played the 90 minutes. It was quite a laboured trot, dare I say, up to the goalkeeper, rather than trying to really force him to play a long ball and, you know, regroup. Slightly disappointed that we's effort in terms of moving about. Like I said, he's different to Kieran and Rory, but I think when you're coming on in the last few minutes of the game, you've got to try and put yourself about a wee bit. Again, he's not had much game time. Again, the Aberdeen aren't overly enamoured with the game time that he's getting. But when you see things like that, you've got to put yourself about a wee bit. You've got to try and make an impression, make an effort, and I just didn't think it was just quite there on Saturday.
Yeah, there was a couple of occasions for, you know, screaming at him to you know, move, try and block the defenders, make it difficult for him. But as you said, he just seemed to be a bit labour almost, kind of thinking, well, I'm on for the last 2 minutes here. we'll just see the 2 minutes.
Yeah, and that's a frustrating thing. I think that maybe, I wouldn't say it was his attitude, but it was almost, I did feel it was half-hearted, if I'm being honest. It's why I felt like a half-hearted, you know, press. And at that point, when you're the fresh striker and you're on, you've got to try and ruffle guys up a wee bit. I just think he could have put himself about a wee bit better.
Yeah. So we're out of the cup. That's the Scottish Cup dream over for another season. And it's just desperately harsh the way it's ended. You know, had they beat us 3-0 or something like that, you know, you would sort of put your hands up and say, but it's just you feel cheated, you feel robbed by it.
I think we can take heart for the cup competitions. It's been two championship teams that have eventually put us out. I thought, obviously, in the Trophy Cup, Dundee United were much the better team. But, you know, it was a narrow scoreline, and it was the same on Saturday. That game could easily have gone the other way. So, yeah, we've gone out in both cup competitions, but I think the effort that the guys put in both games and both tournaments, they can be really, really proud of themselves.
So the draw was made on Sunday, so we're not in it. There are a few intriguing ties. We'll just kind of go through a couple of them. There are four League Two sides left in it. Spartans have gotten a big draw against Hearts. Bonnie Rigg have gotten Falkirk, which, you know, you talk about banana skins for them. I think it'd be an easy one for Falkirk. Forfar have landed another plum tie as well. They've got Hibs. And Dumbarton, they've also got another plum tie. They've got Rangers. So you look at three, well, possibly four, all four sides there in League Two, going home draws against, you know, bigger sides. The money they'll get off that will be fantastic, and that's the thing that we're missing out on now because of not seeing that game out.
Yeah, that'll be the disappointing thing. There was a chance of a really good home tie or a glamour away tie, as Bucky Thistle's got with Celtic. But there is a couple of ties in there. I'm sure Hearts and Hibs are now looking forward to going to Spartans and Forfar. I think there's a lot of ties in this round that are big banana skins for some of the Premiership clubs. I'll throw Aberdeen into the mix as well, going away to Clyde, whacking what happened to it against Darvel in January. Aberdeen's not exactly firing all cylinders at the moment either. So, yeah, come January, that could be a big game for the Dons, but there's a few League Two sides in there that will probably fund their chances in the next round.
Well, you could put in St Johnston going to Airdrie as well. Is a potential one for a cup upset. But, yeah, you mentioned the Bucky going to Parkhead. The money they'll make off of that, that's probably their budget for the next two seasons.
Yeah, the prize money, well, the gate receipts, and everything that comes with it, it might also be selected for TV. I think there was rumour that it might be for the BBC. So, yeah, the glamour tie for them, and their manager was in the press this morning saying there's a few of their boys support Celtic. So, yeah, it's a great deal for them, their club supporters. And, yeah, you hope they go down there and have a good afternoon out. It, you know, that's why you follow your team for games like that and the romance of the cup. And yeah, that would certainly be a shock.
I don't think there's any might about it because it's like it will be on TV, and I think Dumbarton will get the TV money for their game against Rangers as well. So you can almost sort of pick the TV games before they're even announced.
I thought Aberdeen Clyde might sneak into TV coverage just because I can hear it now. The whole build up is, will they do a Darvel and knock Aberdeen out the cup, blah de blah, with Clyde making a good season? I can sort of hear it, but I would probably expect Celtic Bucky to be on the BBC.
Kilmarnock Dundee could be another TV one. Derek McInnes against Tony Docherty.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of games that you look at and you wouldn't really like to pick a winner. That's probably one of them as well. Killy Dundee. That game could literally go either way. It depends how both teams are faring in the division as well. Do they throw it, but do they put a slightly rotated side? So, yeah, there is a lot of decent ties in there.
Right, so we'll move on. We were posed this question a few weeks ago. We felt maybe it was a bit too early to kind of discuss it, but we're going to look at it now. We're, 4 weeks away from the January transfer window being open, there or thereabouts. So the question was, do we think that the team might look to strengthen it in January? And if it's You know, if it's viable in terms of you know, the money and things like that come into it. So the window opens Monday, the 1st of January. At this kind of stage, is there any areas you think that we'll be looking at?
Maybe a winger. Obviously, with Kenny Amos Ritchie, he's got his injury niggles, and with Kenny's had the operation, but you don't want to, you know, give him minutes that he maybe can't do. I think with Conor Duffy being out for the rest of the season, maybe change his plans as well. I guess it depends if Aaron Reid gets recalled by Aberdeen, if they maybe want to put him out somewhere else. Do you then need a third choice striker that they can play winger? But we've also got Kieran Gibbons to come back as well. So there's a few things that I think it'll become a wee bit clearer as we get nearer, but I do think they will probably dip into the market for one or maybe two guys.
It's just a wonder if you mentioned Gibbons there. I think that it might all depend on how his recovery is and you know, what his availability is going to be come end of January kind of thing. If he is going to be available, then they may just sort of hold off and get another midfielder, because I do think we're light in midfield. Amazingly enough, I think that's one of the areas we might be light, because the way we play, we're obviously playing 4-4-2 or the 4-3-1-2. Duffy, as you mentioned, is going to be for the rest of the season. We've had Danny Strachan playing in there as well. Joe McKee's got his niggles as well, but obviously one of our better players, Andy McCarthy, has been injured on numerous occasions as well. So it might just be a case of just adding a little bit more depth into it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the key word is depth. I think we do need players. we've mentioned it before, covering numerous positions. But like you said, I think it's a case of waiting and seeing where Kieran's at come January. Is he going to be back in the fold anytime soon? Again, he said he's setbacks, and hopefully he's on track to come back for the start of the new year and, you know, get back involved in things. It is a new signing. He hasn't really been since coming in the summertime, so it'd be good to get him back. But yeah, probably add in one or two, I would think, like you said, maybe a third choice striker if Aaron goes back. But I certainly think we need another midfielder in.
You mentioned strikers there. I would be tempted to, even if Aaron doesn't get recalled, is go for another one, because if we become too reliant on Rory and Kieran up top to play every minute of every game, you know, injuries and suspensions come into it and things, they may get lucky and you know, avoid those kind of things for the rest of the season. But I would just like another option. Obviously we've got Aaron, big kind of guy, but if we take Shanks off, have we got another penalty box striker that's available?
I think if you're going for a striker, you're looking for somebody with a good bit of pace as well. I think, like I said, Aaron and Rory are different strikers, but if you were able to add in potentially a fourth that's got that pace and getting behind, if you were to take him on with 20 minutes to go, if Shanks and Rory's put in a sterling effort and you've got this guy coming on for the last 20 minutes with pace to burn, yeah, certainly a bad option when you've got Hamish and Conor O'Keefe that can put in the crosser and play the passes through. So, yeah, there are definitely areas that we could strengthen, but I think we all knew this was going to be almost like a rebuild season. A lot of new players coming in, and now that the players are sort of gelled and you can pick your best starting 11, I think January is a time. I don't think there'll be massive improvements in terms of numbers coming in, but I do think there might be maybe one, two or three players coming in through the door.
And I think the vast majority will probably be loan additions as well, potentially players from Premier League, Premiership, Championship, that are maybe their clubs are looking for players to get game time.
Yeah, we've seen summertime can be difficult to get players from the Premiership clubs, because if they've got European football, they've got a lot of domestic games, you've got the cup games as well. Some clubs aren't that keen on letting their players go until January and then giving them the second half of the season. You sort of seen where Alfie Bavage going to Celtic, it was late on in the year before they decided, yeah, we're going to put him out on loan for a while. So I definitely think it's a market we could look to go to. It's not something that Ryan and Jordan look like they want to do. They want to have our players contracted. But yeah, I certainly think a couple of loan players we have shown in recent seasons that we can use the loan market pretty well.
Yeah, and it just adds a little bit of freshness as well. To the squad, but as we said, you know, we've got McCarthy to come back. You know, Jason was missing on Saturday. Defensively wise, I think we're pretty much set, because if David Wilson can come in and play like that that he has been the last couple of weeks, having not played, then you don't need any more. But you know, as I said, McCarthy's been out. We've got Gibbons to come back. Hamish will be building up his match fitness over the coming weeks. So I don't think there's a desperate need for him to be going into the market and getting players just for the sake of getting a player. It's going to be a case of how the next sort of 3, 4, 5 weeks go.
I think what Ryan and Jordan have shown is they, when I just get a player in for player's sake, they've shown through the recruitment process and the summertime that it's a certain style of player that they want, or a certain personality that they think could fit in well. And I wouldn't be surprised even if it goes, you know, late into the January window before they start deciding, actually, yeah, we will actually take that player on. I don't think they'll just do it, you know, in the first week going, right, we'll take A, B and C. I think they'll really plan. They'll see how December goes. It's a big, you know, it's a busy month, a lot of games to try and cram in. And like I said, I think come the end of the year, you sort of really get a proper idea of where everybody will be come the turn of the year. And you can sort of see whether we need players to have a proper kick on for the end of the season.
Yep, so if you've got any topics or any sort of comments like for that you want us to talk about, please drop us a line on our social media. We're always happy to do things like that. So let's go on to Saturday's game. Another tough one, this time against Dumbarton at home. Third place in League 2 at the moment. 8 wins, 2 draws and 3 defeats so far for them this season. And much like us, a pretty good record goal-wise and defensively. They've got 25 goals, 23 goals scored, 11 against. We've got 25 against and 11 against. So, 25-4 and 11 against. So, pretty much equal with that. But it's just weird how the games that we've played recently, you know, we've had Spartans who were fourth. We've played Steny, we're now top. We've now got Dumbarton in third. It's been a tough run of fixtures for us.
Yeah, it is. We took 7 out of 9 for the 3 games in a week. We've then got the cup game. They'll get a training session 2 this week, and another big game on Saturday. The big games seem to be coming thick and fast. But if you're fighting for the title at the top, these are the games that the guys look forward to, and these are the games that the guys want to win, just like they do every game. So I think it'll be a real test for us. Hopefully they'll maybe be, Andy might be back, Ryan might be back, I think Jason might still be out. So you've got a couple of players maybe come back, just change things ever so slightly. But yeah, the big games keep coming, but like I said, if you want to be challenging at the top, these are the games that you need to win, especially at home.
And the last game was pretty tight, 1-0 doing there. And I would expect it to be similarly as tight again.
I think it'll be a close encounter. I think it'll be two attacking teams, but they can also defend really well, as you said, with the goals conceded this season as well. So I don't think it'll be many goals in it. I think it's cliche, but the first goal in this game is massive. You take the lead at home. Yeah, you give you something to build on. But if you concede the first goal, yeah, you don't want nerves to set in. You can feel like the crowd can get, things get a wee bit nervy, a wee bit jittery. But yeah, like I said, you want to win these sort of games at home.
They're in a bit of form as well. 5 wins in the last 6 in the league, and 7 wins in 8 in all competitions. So that they're hitting a bit of form. Started off pretty not so great, but you know, it's two sides that are performing quite well at the minute.
Yeah, it's two teams that you'd anticipated would have been fighting out the top at the start of the season. But, you know, Dumbarton went on a really good run this time last year and then sort of fell away towards the end of the season. So you're hoping the same can sort of reiterate itself and come back to haunt them, whether that can be in some of their minds. But I think if we start the game well on Saturday, I see no reason why we shouldn't get the 3 points.
They won on Saturday in the Cup against Annan, at Annan, I should say, 5-4. It was the final result in the Cup in extra time. Must have been a good game. That were, I think at one stage as well, they were 3-1 down, or sorry, 3-2 down, and then it was 3-3 and 4-5. So, entertaining game. 11 different goal scorers they've got as well through their squad. So, much like us, very similar, you know, that they're spreading the goals out.
Yeah, which when we've previewed games before, that can always be a difficult thing to try and pinpoint where their most dangerous threat comes from, especially when you spread the goals out as they have done. But in a similar vein, so have we. We've got a lot of players that have chipped in with goals here and there, and you're hoping that can continue on Saturday. But I do think it will be quite a close encounter.
In terms of our injuries, I would expect Andy McCarthy to be available. Ryan Strachan would be available as well. Jason could be again for another week, depending on his injury. So it begs the question then, if Andy McCarthy and Ryan Strachan are both available, do they both come in? You'd assume that they would, but then who drops out?
I think Andy will start. I think it would be very, very difficult to drop Davy Wilson, if I'm being honest. Whether that means that you decide to give Caleb a rest and put Scott back to right back and you put Ryan in with Davy Wilson, or however you want to do it. But I think Davy and Kim's are really, really hard done by if he doesn't start the game on Saturday, to be honest.
It may also depend on Joe McKee's availability as well. If he's got an England knock, if he's going to be missing, obviously Andy will come in for him. But there's a possibility you could then move Danny back in midfield again.
Yeah, which is Danny showing this season. It's certainly not a bad thing. He's become very good and very accomplished at playing in midfield. Again, another string to add to his collection because he can sort of cover most positions now. I think the only position I haven't seen him play is goalkeeper, but I dare say he's probably played it in training at some point in his career. But yeah, very accomplished player, and yeah, we'd have no qualms with him slotting into midfield again.
Unless they sort of make any bones about it, they are sitting 2 points behind us at the minute. So they'll know coming up here, their task, if they can get a win here, they'll be above us. And depending on how the other results go as well, we stay in it, they could potentially be top.
Yeah, well, they're not coming up for a draw. They're in really good form. They're coming up to win the game. They're full of confidence after getting through in the weekend as well in the cup. So, yeah, make no bones about it. They're not coming up here to settle for a point. Some teams might say, oh, we'll go up to Balmore and take a point back down the road at Dumbarton and come up here for a point.
It's a top 3-4 at the minute, so they'll want to try and make sure that they don't get cut adrift as well, and that sort of 3-4 becomes just a two-horse race.
Yeah, and that's why points against each other when you're in that sort of mini table is even more important, because it's okay picking up points against the bottom half of the table, but if you want to really try and push away from the pack, beating your rivals, which at the moment looks like it's going to be Dumbarton, and you've got Steny in there as well. So, yeah, these are teams that you really want to try and put away. Obviously, we lost down at Steny the other week, so a real chance to put a marker down by winning our home game against Dumbarton.
Okay, joining me now on the Blue Team podcast to get his take on Saturday's game against Dumbarton is Fraser Clark. Fraser, welcome back to the Blue Team podcast. How are you?
I am all right. Thank you for having me on. I was going to, talk about my team's excellent win in the Scottish Cup and late drama, but actually I don't think that's a good idea with you, because that might bring back some rather strong feelings.
Late drama and Scottish Cup at the minute isn't the two things I want to hear, so we will swiftly move on. but other than that, how are things with you?
Yeah, all good. Off work for a fortnight, so that's been very pleasant. Aside from Scottish Cup, Suns have been going well. Certainly since the last time the teams met, only one defeat in that time. So, yeah, all is bright in the world, apart from outside, where it's absolutely miserable and fucking cold.
As you'd expect at this time of the year. Too early to kind of look at the Christmas sort of things, or are you one of these guys that waits until it's December before you start talking about it?
I quite like Christmas, but because I was on holiday last week, and being in 25 degrees means that you kind of don't think about it. And then I came back and I was lying in bed on Monday morning and thought, probably time I started doing some shopping. So then spent a kind of frightening amount of money on like panic buying presents. That's them off. So the list is well ticked at this stage, I would say.
Well organised, that's what I like to see. So as you mentioned it at the top there, yeah, Scottish Cup win, a 5-4 win, must have been some game.
I have never seen anything like it. I put it on Twitter, so you probably have seen it, but other people maybe wouldn't have done that. I was stood with our program editor, and he will tell you he's been to, I think it's 2,100 and something Dumbarton games in his time. And he turned to me at 4-all and went, I think this game might be in my top 10. So, you know, when Jinky Hilton stuck it in the final minute of extra time, then I wonder how far that moved up his top 10. It was just ridiculous. And the thing was, it wasn't even one of these just wild, crazy games. In the first half, Suns could have been 4 or 5 nil up, and Greg Fleming was absolutely phenomenal. And when the goalkeeper's walking off at the end, you're going, he was probably the best player on the park, and he conceded 5. Kind of gives you an idea of what was going on in the second half. You know, Suns, it was one of those ones, and we've all been there as football fans, where we're having all these chances, and the keeper's pulling off saves, and the ball's hitting the post and offline, and you go, we're going to regret this in the second half. Like, they're not going to be this bad in the second half. And fair play, like, they came out and obviously turned it around. They got 2 quite early goals after Suns had missed a couple more sitters early in the second half and turned it around to 3-2. And I thought, oh man, how have we managed to turn, like, this dominance in the first half into a defeat? But, you know, somehow Finlay Gray found a way beyond Greg Fleming with an overhit cross or a moment of genius. I think he's still admitting it's a cross, so we'll go with that. And that forced it to extra time, and then they took the lead again, and I'm stood there going, how are we losing this game? How are we going to lose this game? And 2 goals in the final 5 minutes of extra time. It was, it was quite a feeling. I can't think of a game. The only game that maybe comes vaguely close in just the sheer drama was one Suns played against East Fife a few years ago, when we had Dom Thomas in the team, and that kind of weird season that the first half was just a joke, and the second half we were great. And we were 3-0 up at half-time against East Fife, and they brought it back to 3-2, and then they went down to 10 men, and we went 4-2 up, and they brought it back to 4-3, and they must have hit the post 2 or 3 times with 10 men in the final 10 minutes, and, whoa, that was exhausting. It was kind of like that, except Suns probably played better in that game against Annan than they did in that game, and I think thoroughly deserved to go through, even if they made it a wee bit difficult.
It's one of those games, if you win it, you're quite glad. You'll probably remember it, but if you got in beat, you were going, it was just horrendous. And it's probably not a game you want to see too often. It wouldn't be good for your health.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
How's the season going so far then? First quarter is well and truly by we now. How would you sort of sum things up?
I think Suns are improving as the weeks go on, which I'm taking as a really good sign. So last season, Dumbarton started with 7 straight wins. I think they were the last team, I won't say in Britain, it was certainly in Scotland, with a 100% record. And it kind of went downhill from there. It's like you peaked too soon, and then it just came to this sort of fizzled out kind of halt at the end. This time around, it was kind of underwhelming at the start. Like, draw with Bonnyrigg, draw with Spartans. I just kind of felt a wee bit like Suns hadn't really got up and running. But I was looking at it, and it was interesting, actually, that last game, the game that Peter had won down at the Rock in, when would it have been, September, October time? September, got my notes there. That felt like the sort of game where we'd spoken about it beforehand, like the pressure was starting to mount on Stevie Farrell. And when Suns lost that game, you'd have seen the thread on Pine Bovril, the reaction on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. People weren't happy. And since then, I'm looking at it, Suns have won 7 of their 8 games, scored 21, conceded 9, and kept 4 clean sheets. And what's the game everyone talks about? The one defeat in that run. But you look at that and you say, yeah, that's the team who look like they're really building. Formation's changed since then. Above all else, he's found a settled side. Okay, there's been a few injuries here and there, but it's now like a settled side. There's patterns of play emerging. Like, you know where Dumbarton's threats are going to be now, which maybe earlier in the season it was, oh, he had a good game. Next week, Ross McLean at Senny, unplayable. The next week, anonymous. And it just kind of flipped between players. Now there's a real pattern of play emerging and a bit of momentum building, maybe for the first time under Stevie Farrell's management. Full stop.
You mentioned the 1-0 win for us doing there. What did you make of that game?
That was another opportunity for Suns to show how not to take chances. Because that first half, I was watching going, oh, like, got to half time and I thought, well, we had a fair few chances here. I think that was the game where Mark Dornan had hit bar. There's a few other good opportunities. And I thought, yeah, this game's here for the taking. And then the second half just got progressively worse and worse. And Peterhead got better and better and grew into it. And yeah, I guess you'd say it was a kind of archetypal game of two halves in that regard, but it felt like it was maybe one of these typical Dumbarton home games when the crowd start to get in the players' backs and the performances dip and then the subs arrive and Stevie Farrell had this kind of frustrating habit which he's got out of now. And I think it was when he was finding his team where he'd be like, right, we've dropped out of this game. Just got to put on a whole barrel load of subs. and that just completely disrupted the rhythm. And when Peterhead's goal arrived, I mean, that last, I'm trying to think, must have been 10, 15 minutes when Hamish Ritchie came on in particular. Peterhead hit the post, certainly came close, Brett Long made a couple of really good saves, and I was going, well, you all know what's going to happen here. Like, unless he blows for full time at 86 minutes or whatever, this is only going to end one way, and sure enough it did.
Talk to me about his comments after the game, Stephen Farrell, as well, because we were quite bemused on the road up, because we were listening to it in the bus on the way home, and sort of perplexed by A, what he said, and B, was he actually watching the same game?
Was that the one? So, what did he say exactly?
To paraphrase, I think he said something along the lines of, we only had the one chance, but yet Brett Long had two or three good saves second half. And I think, judging by the comments by the Dumbarton supporters, they pointed that out to him as well.
Yeah, I remember it now, because he did that once, and then there was one where I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was along those lines of, like, they were no threat at all until they scored, or something. I can't remember if that was something else, but yeah. I think what you saw there was a man who was under serious scrutiny from the support, and who was maybe not dealing with it well, and who was, you know, if you're a Suns fan who wasn't at the game, and the only way you find out what's happened is you watch the post-match, or you read the tweets or whatever, you go, ugh, they've mugged us right off at the end, they've got a late goal and mugged us out of it. It's maybe an easy way to cover it. It's an easy excuse to use, especially when it's a late goal, to go, oh, they've just kind of robbed us at the death or whatever. But yeah, that goal, like I'd said, that goal felt like it was coming. For those last 15 minutes of that game, there was only going to be one team scoring, if either team found the net, and Peterhead, from what I remember, were unlucky not to have scored before that goal arrived. Like, they probably should have scored before that goal arrived.
That was the game as well that young Greg Young got his injury. Did that perhaps maybe sort of stop the momentum a little bit? You know, obviously he was down for quite a bit. Did it maybe have an effect on the team?
I think it possibly did, yeah. And it just sort of disrupts the flow a wee bit. And Greg had been such an important player for Denmark at the start of the season. Now, we can actually kind of get on to his injury. You know, quite often that happens, the injury happens and somebody goes into that place and actually they become a very important player there. Greg had been a really, really important player from the start of the season. Away at Steny in particular, home to Forfar, he was absolutely excellent. But Suns were kind of playing with two left-backs because they signed Matty Shields, and I think they signed him originally as a striker or like a kind of attack-minded winger, and then realised that he's played the past few seasons as a full-back, and there's maybe a reason for that's where he's at his best, and if he was a really good winger, then he probably wouldn't have been playing left back for two seasons for Hamilton. So in the game itself, it maybe disrupted things. The following week, Matty Shields started at left back, and he set up two goals against Runar, and since then, the two fullbacks, Matty Shields on the left, Carlo Pinatello on the right, who I think played in centre mid in that game, he says flicking to his notes, yep, he played in centre mid in that game. The injury meant that Faz basically rejigged the defence, went back to a back four, Shields at left back, a left back at left back, who can play elsewhere, but is at his best at left-back, and Carlo at right-back, who, again, can play, you can play him anywhere, and he'd be excellent, but his best position for me is at right-back. So almost, sounds really harsh to say, but almost forced Stevie Farrell's hand a wee bit, that injury, into, right, you've got a big gaping hole at left-back, and you've got a guy who can play there, and actually it's worked out in that respect.
Yeah, and he's had his surgery now, I believe, as well. How's that going?
Seems to have all gone okay. Obviously, I think his season's over, certainly, with it being an ACL. Like, it's going to be a long-term recovery. Maybe, I think, going off previous players who've had that, maybe if you can get him back training for the summer, that would be a good sign. And get, you know, even if it's not a full pre-season, but just get a bit of training, a bit of effort into the legs over the summer, and then maybe have him back, I guess, in August, September time next year. It's so harsh to see, especially when it's a young player. It just makes it feel a wee bit worse when it's someone who hasn't really had a career. I mean, it's bad enough. Like, you see players getting ACLs quite often, but it's bad enough when it's some guy who's 30 with 300 games under his belt. But when you see somebody who is 21, 20, just making his way in the game, this was his first season as a regular. He was on loan at Elgin last year, but was kind of in and out the team a wee bit. His first season as a regular, really starting to make a name for himself. And I'd said that if he had continued playing and developing the way he was, I could have seen him maybe jump into an Alloa, you know, like a kind of League One, bigger than us, part-time club, and someone like Alloa, or maybe even someone like Queen of the South in the Championship, and then just building himself back up into being a full-time footballer again, because I think he's good enough. He's there's still bits and bobs that Craig Young has to learn, obviously, but like the quality he's got in his left foot, way, way too good for League Two. And the kind of the things that he could do on the ball, like the skill that he had to go beyond players, you're looking at him like a fullback in League Two, like, yep, that's, that tends to suggest you might go somewhere a wee bit further. So hopefully he can take maybe even a wee bit of inspiration from an ex-Suns player, an old teammate of his as well at Wraith, and Lewis Vaughan, who's, I think he did his ACL 3 or 4 times. He's came back, still scoring goals for them, still a standout player in the Championship. So hopefully, you know, Lewis has been on the phone or someone like that who's done it before can just put an arm around him and be like, you know, it's going to be tough, especially at the moment when it's winter and you're stuck in your bed or you're stuck in the house and you can't go out for a run, you can't take part in training, but, you know, put the arm around him and be like, you'll get there, you've got the talent, keep focused on that recovery. And, you know, when you're that young, you've still got your whole career ahead of you, you've got 15 years, so fingers crossed he comes back just as strong, if not stronger, than he was when he got the injury.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the record of the two sides in terms of goals scored and goals conceded, it's fairly even, so would you expect this game again on Saturday to be as tight?
What did I say last time and what happened? Yeah, so I was looking at it as well, and I think Suns have scored 21 and Peterhead have scored 20, there or thereabouts, in their last 7 or 8 games. So it's 40 goals across 16 games. I'm not going to say it, but you all know what I'm thinking. Like, will it be a stalemate? Like, maybe the teams will cancel each other out. Maybe it will be. I mean, that last game, though, could have been 3-3 as easily as it was 1-0. Yeah. So I would expect an open game. I think you've got two teams who know that they have strength in attack. So when Suns have fallen behind this season, they have maybe struggled a wee bit to get back into a game. They also fell behind at Annan twice. And if you look at the reaction of the players, even after Aidan Smith's header in extra time, it wasn't really heads going down, it wasn't hands on heads in despair. It was just like, right, well, now we need to go and score a goal again. So I think both teams will believe that they can score goals. And that hopefully bodes well for an entertaining game. Maybe not a 5-4 entertaining game, but you've got two, I don't think you've got either team who'll be quite happy to sit in and camp and try and keep it tight and hit on the break, I don't think. But I'm saying nothing about score lines after last
time. It's okay, I'm not going to ask you. But and you look at the way the league table is now, a win for Dumbarton, and you know, obviously looking at the other results at Stenny, you could be top it by the end of the game.
Yeah, it's a huge, this game and then the following week at home to Stenhousemuir, that could define Dumbarton's season. If you lose those two games, it's not impossible to win the league or anything silly like that, but it's quite a big blow quite early on, and it puts a lot of pressure on, not just for Suns basically knowing that they can't really slip up, but also you're looking at other results and going, right, who Peterhead got to, oh, well, they're going to have to drop points, and Stenny are going to have to drop points. You might even end up looking over your shoulder at Spartans, who, for my money, are probably one of the best teams we've played this season, and I think on their day, they're as good as anyone. I just, maybe over the course of the season, they don't have the experience and the strength and depth that Peterhead, Dumbarton and Stenny as the top three do. But on their day, I think Spartans can beat anyone in the league. So that would start to, you know, that could drag Suns into that fourth place battle. And then who knows, you know, maybe Bonnyrigg will kick on a wee bit. If they keep getting penalties at this rate, then they certainly will. You know, East Fife have to improve. Forfar have to improve. Clyde under Ian McCall, probably too far back to mount a playoff push. And their squad, I don't like the look of their squad at all. But they've got a good manager there who'll do business in January. Then it would have Suns fans looking over their shoulders. So these two games feel really, really big for Dumbarton. And, you know, like, put the Dare to Dream hat on, Suns win both their games, you know, confidence should be sky high. Because if you win those two games against Stenhousemuir and against Peterhead, I think Dumbarton will be top of the league heading towards Christmas. It's a position everyone wants to be in. Didn't do us any good last year, but it's a position everyone wants to be in.
Yeah, and on the flip side as well, you don't want them end up losing the game and making it a two-horse race.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you've got these top three clubs at the moment who have sort of broken away. And I think, and certainly from speaking to Stevie Farrell at the Meet the Manager, he expects it to be like the three of them, but not. So last season you had Dumbarton, Stirling Albion, and then a really big gap back to Annan and then back to the playoff teams at East Fife. This season, I don't think there'll be as big a gap, mainly because there's three teams involved and not just the two of them. But it does look like it's going to be a three-horse race between those three sides who are up there at the moment. You look at their squads, I don't think there's a lot between them. You look at their strengths and weaknesses. I think, like, if I'm being completely honest, I think Stenhousemuir have the best defence. I think Peterhead have the best attack. I think Dumbarton are somewhere in the middle. And I'm hoping that that somewhere in the middle might be the best of both worlds. Because you look at Stenny's defence, with the two Jamesons, Gregor Buchanan, you think they're not going to concede an awful lot of goals. Yeah. You look at your guys' strike force in particular with McAllister and Shanks, but then with guys like Hamish Ritchie, who, if he ever wants to move to the central belt, I'll be straight on the phone convincing him that Dumbarton is where he wants to be. So I think he's a great player, and also he loves a goal against us and just really winds me up. So like, you've got those attacking options, and Dumbarton have good attacking options, but maybe not the same strength and depth, maybe not the same versatility. And I think they've got a good defence, but I don't think they're as like rock solid as Stenny, or certainly as solid as they were last season. But the reason they're not as solid as they were last season is that they're better going forward. So I'm hoping that that's a real recipe, best of both worlds, but that might be me being optimistic.
Well, we'll see how it goes the next time we talk in the new year. But once again, Fraser, a pleasure to talk to you. Wish you well over the Christmas period, and wish you and your family all the best for the Christmas and New Year. And we'll maybe catch up with you again in the new year.
Yeah, see you then. Thank you for having me.
And that is it for this week. We do hope you have enjoyed it. My thanks goes to Fraser Clark for joining me to preview Saturday's game against Dumbarton, and of course for Martin Smith for being here as always. Big thank you to everyone for listening and for your comments and questions. Do keep them coming in, we do appreciate them. Martin and I will be back again next week, so until then, stay safe and we'll see you all again very soon.